I didn't make the kirtan too long because there's already so little time that I don't know how we're going to possibly be able to cover such a huge topic as the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's an impossible task. But even then I was thinking, even if I have all the time of the world, I would still not be able to cover the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in that sense, it doesn't make any difference, because what is my capacity to even approach the CC? But the purpose of this seminar is not to that I will give the complete explanation of what the deeper meanings are of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that nobody ever knew, some secrets or anything like that. No, rather, it is simply a means of remembering, contemplating, associating together, and exchanging together about the pastimes and meanings of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and so that we can increase our taste in Krishna consciousness. I've written a paper, and we're going to hand it out. I hope, I don't know if there are enough copies. It's always like that. I'm not really going to follow that paper in a very strict way. So even if you don't have a paper, it doesn't really matter that much, you know, because I felt, all right, there must be some sort of structure, some framework, but at the same time, I feel that in an exchange of Krishna Katha, the most interesting part is that as we begin to speak and exchange with questions, answers, or comments and reactions, and a favorable mood, then something starts to happen, and things come out of the mouth of the speaker that he didn't even know that were in there, right? So I hope that that will happen. So therefore, I kind of left it open for being spontaneous. I'm also not going to read this paper now, but I want to just make my first point. And my first point is basically that we depend very much on taste in our spiritual life. We're all looking for that, because without it, the years begin to count and it becomes difficult to maintain our spiritual purity and status, etc. In the beginning, okay, it's easy because one is conquering, one is going forward, one is feeling that he's advancing with huge jumps, right, forward to the spiritual world. And then with time, it's, my God, is it a long way? Will we ever get there? Probably not, at least not this lifetime kind of mood tends to come. And at that state, we are really beginning to appreciate more that we are dependent on so many things. We begin to see that we are not so strong in our Krishna consciousness. And we, with time, we begin to see that we depend on many, many factors for our support. We begin to value the devotees more, because we realize these are the few people that that are also into Krishna consciousness. They may be a little different than I am, but anyway, let's just accept them. Right? In the beginning, one might think, well, this one's strange, that one, but with time, one becomes more more appreciative for Vaishnava relationships. One becomes more careful. I also, in the beginning, I used to think, well, when there was a difference of opinion, I thought, well, if I'm right, then, you know, I'm right, and then the other person has to accept. Now, I may be wrong, So let me check it with other people. And if other Vaishnavas say I'm right, well, if they confirm it, then I must be right. Yeah? It's logically, seems right to me. Others confirm it, it's right. Then it must be right. So in that way, then I feel, well, then I'm right. And it was just a confrontation. But nowadays, I'm more careful of that because I noticed that with all these confrontations, some people really didn't like me. Some people still don't like me because of confrontations of so many years ago. Anyway, if there's anybody here, sorry for that. Trying to change now. What to do? We are trying to appreciate every Vaishnava for whatever contribution that Vaishnava is making. Because we know we're depending on the Vaishnavas. And we're depending on the discussions of Krishna consciousness. We're depending on the scriptures. We're depending on all the possible association we can get. And with the years, we begin to realize how much we depend on this. So, therefore, we depend on taste. All these things will give us taste. In Bhagavatam, it is explained, Sushusho Shadadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi San Mahat Sevya Vipa Punyatirtani Sevyat. By serving the Vaishnavas, one can develop taste to hear about Krishna. So taste is the first principle. I'll read a little bit what I wrote on the paper. I'll just start from main theme onwards. While engaged in the process of devotional service at our present level, we experience that the mind and senses appear to have a life of their own and want to involve in activities which are, as we know, only too well, not beneficial at all. So what is our predicament? Are we simply meant to continue in a spirit of austerity and forbearance and wait for that day to come when our mind and senses have become purified and will be spontaneously attracted to Krishna? When Uddhava saw a beautiful young girl, he felt attracted. He was surprised. My mind is attracted just as much to this girl as to Krishna. I think it must be Krishna, dressed up like a girl. And it was. So that is another level of Krishna consciousness, obviously. That's like a very high level of Krishna consciousness, where one is naturally Krishna conscious. But for most of us, Krishna consciousness is something we would like to have, but it is a struggle at the same time to stay in good consciousness. The mind is always drifting away and is attracted to material things or just not able to concentrate. We chant, but we cannot really enter into the holy name all the time. Sometimes there are these moments, but it's not always inspired chanting and like that. We find that our mind is troubling us from time to time. Maybe not all the time, there are inspired moments, but still, over the years, a big struggle with the mind. And we've all seen the little sketch somewhere hanging on a notice board of a mind with many tentacles coming out. I think you have seen it. I have seen it in many temples. Right? A mind, picture of a mind with many tentacles and arms coming out and reaching out to so many things. And we could all relate to that mind. We have it. So it says that, yes, in Bhagavatam it says one must cut the knot of karma with the sword of knowledge. But well, that's all good and well. But the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, one may be agitated. So what to do? The Chaitanya Charitamrita then describes the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very interesting. It said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mind was always attracted to Krishna. Lord Sri Krishna's beauty, the sound of his words and the vibration of his flute, his touch, his fragrance, and the taste of his lips are full of an indescribable sweetness. When all these features attract my five senses at once, my senses all ride together on the single horse of my mind, but want to go in five different directions. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so much attracted to Krishna that when he saw the form of Krishna, that wanted to absorb his whole consciousness. But simultaneously hearing about Krishna, then his whole consciousness wanted to go in there. And in this way, all the senses were competing with each other, right, for the full attention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that was his dilemma. So he also didn't have a peaceful mind, just like we don't have. He also had his inner conflict, like we may have. But the inner conflict that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had was not the conflict that we have, Krishna or Maya, right? That inner conflict with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just this Krishna or that Krishna. This aspect of Krishna or that aspect of Krishna. So, and that's this, and that is similar in, with Srimati Radharani. And Rupa Goswami described that in the Vidukta Madhava, how Srimati Radharani became simultaneously attracted through to three personalities, right? One was that person that she saw, the other person who had stolen her mind by the flute. We'll read these sections later on. So, in our present state, most of us are not always absorbed in just different degrees of remembering Krishna. Sometimes totally ecstatic, sometimes just ecstatic. No, in many cases, it is a matter of struggle. So, therefore, what I felt is written on the back on the side of the page. The Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita fills our mind with wonder about the amazing qualities, pastimes, and mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and pushes aside all the nasty thoughts of mundane entanglement to the background of our consciousness. So at this stage, we may not be able to fully be free from thoughts of Maya, from some attraction to sinful activity. These things are still manifesting itself in our consciousness. But by simply pouring a lot of nectar in that consciousness all the time, then the force of that nectar just pushes away all these sinful, nasty things to somewhere the horizon, you know, of our consciousness. And maybe one day it will just fall off, just like a flat earth, you know, like, we'll just get rid of these impurities. One day, they'll just dissolve. Now, these nasty thoughts may appear like little clouds on the horizon. So, this is how we fill our mind always with the with remembering the pastimes and descriptions of the Supreme Lord. And we just remain in this mood of remaining full, keep on drinking it in. So that kind of association with scriptures or sadhana is a little different than what I refer to as the slow leaking tire. Right? If you have a car and the tire is leaking a little bit, then you can keep on driving. You just have to put a little air every once in a while. So sometimes we see also that in Krishna consciousness, we just get really burned out. And, you know, like, how do you feel? All terrible. Why? I didn't read for 3 days. No, you didn't read for 3 days. Terrible. Quick, quick. Here's a book, you know. And read. And you just put some air, right? And you kind of feel like, Yes, I can go again, right? So sometimes we take it that our activities of sadhana are like that, to kind of pump up our fading enthusiasm, our fading determination, and we have to pump again and again, or we're going to bloop. But that's on the lower end, really. I'm looking here more at the other side of the hearing and chanting, that we just get into the mood of tasting very nice things in Krishna consciousness, one after another. You know, just keep on taking the sweets, right? And well, a salty in between as well, doesn't matter, whatever, but just go on and on and on as much as we can. And this is actually the process. So therefore, the process of breaking through from struggling in spiritual life to being inspired in spiritual life is not a matter of just struggling and struggling and waiting for the day that we'll wake up in an ecstatic mood, right? Rather, it must come to the point where we actively begin to taste the nectar that all the acharyas are tasting and that all the great devotees are always tasting, right? Whether we have so much taste for it or not, who cares? Just taste it, right? Let us just embrace it and go for it. And well, even if there's not so much taste, little taste may come. So with that little preface, I wanted to begin. And then, well, where to begin? I thought, let me begin in the last chapter of the Adi Lila. And the reason is because that's the point where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins to reveal his transcendental nature. He begins to reveal himself really openly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And prior to that, there are some hidden pastimes in his childhood. And prior to that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is appearing as Nimai Pandit. And as Nimai... Hold on, I just have to find the right page. Here it is. As Nimai Pandit, he is, of course, living in great pride. He is the jewel of all the brahmanas in Navadvip, with his beautiful aristocratic features. And it is said, exhibiting his scholarship, beauty and fine dress, Lord Chaitanya danced, chanted, and distributed the holy name of the Lord to awaken dormant love of Krishna. Thus, Lord Sri Gaurasundar shone in his youthful pastimes. As he entered his youth, the Lord decorated himself with ornaments, dressed himself in fine cloth, garlanded himself with flowers, and smeared himself with sandalwood. So like this, Lord Chaitanya was looking extraordinarily beautiful, very well dressed, covered in sandalwood paste, and everyone was just amazed by the sight. Then he was very, very arrogant. By dint of pride in his education, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not caring for anyone else, defeated all kinds of learned scholars while executing his studies. All these things are described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat in very elaborate ways, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just sometimes defeating his own arguments and everyone was amazed, and then he was defeating them again and he was defeating everybody else, and he was very arrogant and proud about it. And like this, it is mentioned that he was harassing the Vaishnavas who would cross the street when they'd see him, afraid that he would just somehow or other confront them with very difficult questions they couldn't answer. And in this way, the Lord was hiding himself. But then, thereafter, the Lord went to Gaya, and there he met Srila Ishwarapuri. So, in Gaya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was initiated by Ishwarapuri, and immediately afterwards, he exhibited signs of love of Godhead. He again displayed symptoms after returning home. So, again, a little Chaitanya Bhagavat just to fill in the gaps. It was described that suddenly Nimai had totally changed. When he came back from Gaya, Nimai had become humble. Everyone was shocked, because he used to be so proud and arrogant, and suddenly he was very humble, and he was serving all the Vaishnavas everywhere. And everyone was saying, oh, he's getting so many blessings now, he's making a lot of advancement. You know, they treated him like Bhakta Nimai, kind of. And we're thinking, oh, so nice that he's become a devotee now, right? He can get the blessings of all the devotees. Anyway, so then he became, but he began to display more and more his transcendental nature. And very soon after that, it is said, again, a little Chaitanya Bhagavad, it is said that because in the house of Srivas Thakur, the Vaishnavas were always assembling and having their kirtan there, and the neighbors were feeling very disturbed at this howling, at this noise in the night, at these endless parties that were just going on there, I mean, totally antisocial. And therefore, you know, they had complained to the authorities many, many times, right? And this time, they had successfully done so. And it was said that a ship with soldiers was on the way to arrest Srivas Thakur, right? And it is so Srivas was getting a little worried because the news was really out. It was really going to happen. So Srivas was in his house with the doors locked and everything locked, worshipping Lord Nisringadev, right? And then at that time, Lord Chaitanya came. And Lord Chaitanya at that time just came in, or came to the house of Srivas, and he kicked the door. He kicked it with a real heart thundering kick, and he yelled out, Srivas! And Srivas started to even worship more. He thought that the soldiers had arrived. But no, Lord Chaitanya called out and said, Srivas, don't you understand that the Lord who you are worshipping is here? Right? He's right here. So, at that time, Srivas came, opened the door, and Lord Chaitanya stood there in his full glory, and suddenly Srivas understood, right, that here was indeed the Supreme Lord. And then the Lord said, so, are you going to worship me or anything like that? So then that was arranged, and they arranged the Lord. They arranged worship, they offered arati, and they set the Lord down, and they even offered abhishek, etc. It says here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also that abhishek was offered. So in this way, gradually, Lord Chaitanya began to reveal his transcendental identity to all the different devotees. And, well, it is said that soon after that, after the Lord had revealed his identity to Srivas, then the time came that Lord Nityananda appeared in Mayapur. So all these things are just described in some sort of overview, and I follow that. I'm not going to elaborate on all that so much. Basically, then Lord Nityananda also appeared, and Lord Chaitanya began to exhibit his transcendental nature. He showed different transcendental forms to the Lord, to Lord Nityananda. He showed, one day Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited to Lord Nityananda Prabhu a six-armed form bearing a conch shell, disc, club, lotus flower, bow, and flute. Thereafter the Lord showed him his four-armed form standing in a three-curved posture. With two hands he played upon a flute, and in the other two he carried a conch shell and disc. And finally, the Lord showed Nityananda Prabhu his two-armed form of Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, simply playing on his flute, his bluish body dressed in yellow garments. And it said that after that, Nityananda Prabhu then arranged to offer the Vyasa Puja, or worship the spiritual master, to Lord Sri Gaurasundar. I'll read the purport. By the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu arranged for Vyasa Puja of the Lord on the night of the full moon. He arranged for Vyasa Puja or Guru Puja through the agency of Vyasadev. Since Vyasadev is the original Guru, spiritual master, of all who follow the Vedic principles, worship of the spiritual master is called Vyasa Puja.
Nityananda Prabhu arranged for the Vyasa Puja, and Sankirtan was going on. But when he tried to put a garland on the shoulder of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw himself in Lord Chaitanya. There's no difference between the spiritual positions of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, or Krishna and Balaram. It is said that suddenly Lord Chaitanya carried a plow-like weapon, and he became like, you know, he carried a plow, and he began to just look like Lord Nityananda. So in this way, he was worshipping himself. And it was very nice, because here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first of all, established his transcendental nature, and then showed the transcendental nature of Lord Nityananda. Another nice story, which is then also mentioned here in this chapter, from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it said, thereafter, Mother Sachidevi saw the brothers Krishna and Balaram in their manifestation of Lord Chaitanya Nityananda. Then the Lord delivered the two brothers Jagai and Madai. One night, Sachidevi dreamt that the deities in her house, Krishna and Balaram, had taken the forms of Chaitanya and Nityananda, and were fighting one another, as children do, to eat the naivedya, or offering to the deities. On the next day, by the will of Lord Chaitanya, Sachidevi invited Nityananda to take prasad at her house. Thus, Vishwambar, Lord Chaitanya, and Nityananda were eating together, and Sachidevi realized that they were none other than Krishna and Balaram. Seeing this, she fainted. There was a whole fight going on. It's a famous story, but very nice story, how, you know, Gornitai basically said to Krishna Balaram, get out of here, right? It's our time now. This is our yuga, so the offering is for us and not for you, right? So therefore, you have no business being here, you know. I mean, it's our turn. And they wanted to take the whole offering. And Mother Sachi was seeing this, and she woke up and was just thinking, why is Nimai fighting with the deities? Huh? She really couldn't figure it out, you know. Why? I mean, what a strange dream. Nimai fighting with the deities? Why did he do this? And like this, she was totally bewildered. But then later that day, Nityananda had just arrived, right? It was quite new in Navadvip. But somehow or other, they came to the house of Mother Sachi, and suddenly she realized they were Krishna and Balaram. But then she fainted, and after she came to her senses, then she became too preoccupied with feeding both the brothers, and in this way she forgot again that they were the Supreme Lord. Yes. So just like Mother Yasoda, when she looked in the mouth of Krishna to see the mud, you know, she also began to realize that she saw all the universes, etc., and she realized that this is going on. Is this due to the mystic power of my boy? No, cannot be. Then, is it that I've gone mad? No, I have no history of madness. Is it then because the devas maybe are doing this? Why would the demigods do something with an ordinary person like me? Then, it must be really Krishna who is doing this. Then Garga Muni must have been right. And Krishna is actually not my son. He's the Supreme Lord. And I am not the one I think I am, the queen of all the residents of Vrindavan. And I'm not the owner of all these cows and all these villagers. I'm simply the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. But then she saw also how Krishna was crawling on the ground, and she forgot again. She just picked up and said, oh, he's so wonderful, and then she just fed him. So in this way, we see Mother Sachi was in the same consciousness of being covered over by yoga maya potency. Srila Prabhupada explains that yoga maya is only existing in the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Golok Vrindavan, right? Either in his pastimes as Krishna or in his pastimes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the Vaikuntha pastimes of the Lord, yoga maya is absent, right? And therefore, in Vaikuntha, the devotees are always aware of the opulence and the glories of the Lord. They are always aware of the Lord who is the source of unlimited manifestations and energies and so forth, but not the residents of Vrindavan and not the devotees in the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in this way, we are seeing that the Lord begins to gradually reveal His transcendental identity. And it's followed by the Mahaprakash Lila, where Lord Chaitanya was sitting in the house of Srivas on the altar, on the Sringasan actually, for 21 hours, and there remembering different devotees at different times. Like, I'll give one example. There's the story of Haridas Thakur, who at that time was also there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Haridas, remember how you were being beaten in 22 marketplaces. And do you remember that somehow or other you did not feel the beating on your back at all?" Right. So Haridas said, yes, my Lord, I remember. And so Lord Chaitanya said, "Haridas, do you know why?" He said, "Somehow or other, by your mercy, my Lord, by your mercy only. How else?" Lord Chaitanya said, "You know, when these rascals, when they were whipping you, I was coming down to that place with great speed, and my Sudarshan Chakra was raised, and I was ready to kill them. But then, just as I was about to kill them, you were praying, my dear Lord, please forgive them, please don't kill them, or please don't give them any reaction for the offense, etc." So then the Lord said, "Then what could I do, Then what could I do?" So it was such a predicament. The Lord said, at that point, I didn't know what to do. Right? He blocked my whole plan. So he said, then I only saw one option, right? And at that time, I put my back over your back. And I took all those beatings on my back. And Lord Chaitanya turned around and showed his back. And all the beating marks were on his back. So I just was, of course, shocked and also overwhelmed to see how much, to what extent the Lord was going to protect his devotee. To how much the Lord was extending himself for his devotee. Right? If we see the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we see there's no limit to what extent he will go. He was taking the beating on his own back. So all these kind of things were being discussed. So this Mahaprakash, which was going on for 21 hours, was so ecstatic because every devotee was finding out more and more about the transcendental nature of the Lord, and it was confirmed. In each case, it was confirmed that something extraordinary had happened. So, another example is the story of one grihastha with a young daughter who was traveling at night and who was being followed by a group of lusty Muslim men, and he was very. Our devotee was very worried about the ladies in the night. He's thinking, "My God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen?" So they were running faster and faster, and then they came to a river. And then he's just desperate what to do now. He prayed to the Lord, "Lord, please protect us." Right? And then just at that time, a boatman appeared. There was a boat and there was a light in the boat, and this boat was peacefully rowing across the river, and the whole family boarded that boat and they just rowed away, and the harassers were left behind on the bank. So Lord Chaitanya said, "You remember that incident?" He said, "Yes, I remember that incident. Yes, of course. How could I ever forget that night? I remember that night like I'll never forget it." "Yes," Lord Chaitanya said, "do you remember that boatman?" "Yes," he said, "I remember that boatman." Lord Chaitanya said, "That boatman was I." Right? So Lord Chaitanya had come as the boatman. So like this, in the Mahaprakash Lila, Lord Chaitanya was reminding all the devotees of some very intimate, special dealing he had with them. And so all the devotees were hearing this, so you can imagine what nectar was being churned, and everyone
forgot everything. For 21 hours, everyone was getting more and more ecstatic, and nobody cared about the time, and everyone was just, it seemed like a moment. In this way, Lord Chaitanya revealed how all along he had been the transcendental Lord. Well, from that day on, Lord Chaitanya began to show more and more transcendental activities. He got into the mood of Varaha and was riding on the shoulders of Murari Gupta. One time he got into the mood of Nrisinga. Right? He is asking for the Vishnu Sahasranam to be recited. And when the Vishnu Sahasranam was being recited, then suddenly Lord Chaitanya became ecstatic and began to got into the mood of Nrisinga. But everyone became very afraid. So then he felt bad. He said, it's an offense to cause fear to the devotees. Right? It is mentioned like that as one of the regulative principles of devotional service, which says, udvega nadiba, one should not give anxiety to, one should not be the cause of anxiety to anyone, what to speak of a devotee. So, there are many descriptions in this chapter which are famous. We may remember the mango tree at Amgad, how Lord Chaitanya arranged for the mangoes to grow off that tree. Very nice, juicy. We may remember how one time an astrologer came to the door of the Lord. You remember that pastime and that astrologer recognized the Lord? I like that myself, that astrologer thing. So, one thing I always find in my readings over the years, I did not follow Burijan's overview system. Right? Although I was living next door, because I was living here in Vrindavan, I somehow or other couldn't get myself to do it. You know, whatever it was, maybe too lazy. Somehow or other, wasn't my approach. I had a different approach. Right? Never liked this approach. From, well, take a verse. After this incident, the Lord remained in an ecstatic position for 21 hours, and all the devotees saw his specific pastime. What is the main point? What are the subsidiary points? Like that, he taught. I just could not get my mind into that. Discipline. You know, maybe not disciplined enough. So I read in a different way. What I did is I had notebooks, right? Many notebooks. And whenever I read something that I considered really nice, right, I wrote it down. Right? I always studied according to taste. Right? My idea was, well, you know, like anything I like, write it down. So in the end, I have a notebook which I really like, right? Because it's full of things I like, right? Yeah, it's just one notebook full of nectar, actually, at least from my perspective. Some people may look at it and say, like, oh boy, but from my perspective, it's nectar, right? Because those are things I liked. So I still study that way, and it still worked that way. Although today I did do a little outline of the chapter so that I could, kind of introduce the main theme, right? But things I like, yes. That's what I want to bring out in this particular section, that let us just read things we like, right? Let us just select things. Let us just let us not be too much in the mood of like scholarly students, you know. Let us just be devotees and just go straight for the nectar, right? Why not, you know? Why not just stick our fingers in the cream, right, and go straight for the, like, you know? Go for the cream. Why would we first go through the whole discipline of, you know, eating the rice, the dal, and all the other that we get every day, right? Cream we want, yes.
So,
I like this. Of course, what I consider cream, you know, others may not consider cream. But I like this astrologer story, so I'll get into it. And I guess astrology anyway is kind of like a modern topic. Lots of people are into astrology these days. So I thought, I can't go wrong with astrology.
I got to get used to this time schedule. So 12 o'clock is approaching. So after this, maybe I'm going to round off this portion and then I'm going to open it up for reactions from your side. So please, if you have any thoughts, write them down. Whatever things, you know, trigger off ideas, reactions, you know, just write it down and share it with us. Okay? It just doesn't have to be questions. Maybe something you hear will remind you of something else. Nice. Write it down, and just we'll save the last half hour for that. So one day an astrologer came, who was supposed to know everything, past, present, and future. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received him with all honor and put this question before him. Please tell me who I was in my previous birth. The Lord said, please tell me by your astrological computations. Hearing the words of the Lord, the astrologer immediately began to calculate. Through calculation and meditation, the all-knowing astrologer saw the greatly effulgent body of the Lord, which is the resting place of all the unlimited Vaikuntha planets. Seeing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same absolute truth, the Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, the astrologer was confused. Struck with wonder, the astrologer remained silent, unable to speak. But when the Lord again put the question before him, he replied as follows. My dear sir, in your previous birth, you were the shelter of all creation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of all opulences. You are now the same personality of Godhead that you were in your previous birth. Your identity is inconceivable, eternal happiness. When the astrologer was speaking so highly of him, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped him and began to smile. My dear sir, he said, I think you do not know very clearly what I was. For I know that in my previous birth, I was a cowherd boy. It's nice, huh? In my last birth, I was born in the family of cowherd men, and I gave protection to the calves and cows. Because of such pious activities, I've now become the son of a brahmana. The astrologer said, what I saw in meditation was full of opulence, and therefore I was confused. I am certain that your form and the form I saw in the meditation are one and the same. If I see any difference, this is an act of your illusory energy. The all-knowing astrologer concluded, whatever you may be, or whoever you may be, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. By this causeless mercy, the Lord then gave him love of Godhead, thus rewarding him for his service.
It's far out, huh? This astrologer is the only astrologer who really attained perfection through his astrology, right? Instead of, you know, being mental a whole lifetime about my Rahu and my Ketu and my Mars and my this and that, this astrologer got love of God. Now, that's my astrologer. He's my favorite astrologer. So like that, Lord Chaitanya is already at the end of this 17th chapter. It just begins to reveal more and more his transcendental identity to the different devotees. And, well, then there's a whole section in the chapter which deals with the Chandkazi pastime. I will not deal with it. It's too long today to deal with that. We cannot cover the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. But let it be, let it just stand there in its own glories. What I want to go to is the point where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was absorbed in transcendental
remembrance. He was so overwhelmed by love of God, he began to show his ecstatic nature. It is said that Srivas was asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to describe the glories of Krishna. So Srivas said, was speaking about the flute that was stolen by the gopis. And immediately Lord Chaitanya became ecstatic and said, more, recite more, recite more. And then Srivas began to describe many pastimes of the 10th canto and came to Ras Lila and so many things. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept him reciting and speaking for the entire night and was like totally absorbed in ecstatic love of God all along. There were transcendental dramas being performed in the house of Srivas. So here we're seeing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins to enter or begins to display his great ecstasies and how he's just overwhelmed in by remembering Krishna. How we can remember in the introduction that I gave about the mind, which was like a horse with the five senses on top and all competing for prominence, right? Each pulling in a different direction. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing such great ecstasies. Then, at the end of this chapter, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his ecstasy, was remembering the gopis. One day, the Lord, in the ecstasy of the gopis, not only remembering the gopis, but himself being in the mood of the gopis, was sitting in his house, very morose in separation. He was calling, "Gopi, Gopi," right? A student who came to see the Lord was astonished that the Lord was chanting, "Gopi, Gopi," right? Thus he spoke as follows. Now, I bet we also, if we would go to Prabhupada's house and it would in the morning it would be someone sitting there, "Gopi, Gopi, 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 Gopi," that we also would go like, So from one perspective, one can appreciate the student's reaction, you know. Like, I mean, they were not just coming from outer space. They had some reasons for doubting the chanting of Gopi, Gopi. "Why are you chanting the names Gopi, Gopi, instead of chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is so glorious? What pious results will you achieve by such chanting?" Hearing the foolish student, the Lord, greatly angry, rebuked Lord Krishna in various ways. Then he blasphemed Krishna, right? Lord Chaitanya. First he's chanting Gopi. Next he takes up a stick, starts blaspheming. This student who actually corrected him, you know, like, I mean, here's some guy, he's chanting Gopi Gopi, right? You give him good advice from the scriptures, chant the holy name. What does he do? He grabs a stick, begins to blaspheme the Lord, right? First the Lord, right? And then chases away the good advisor with a stick. Yeah, so this, you can understand how this student was, from his perspective, was looking upon the matter, right? But Lord Chaitanya chased him. And the devotees had to interfere to somehow or other pacify the Lord. And it said that the Brahmana student ran to a place where 1,000 students were studying together. There he described the incident to them. Hearing of this incident of the students, all being very angry and wanting to beat the Lord. Okay, at that time, Lord Chaitanya began to contemplate taking sannyas. And that's as far as I want to take it today. Lord Chaitanya, being omniscient, could understand the degradation of these students. Thus he sat at home, contemplating how to rescue them. All the so-called professors and scientists and their students generally follow the regulative principles of religion, fruitive activities and austerities, the Lord sought. Yet at the same time, they're blasphemers and rogues. The Veda Vadarata, we could say, those who are learned within the Vedic scriptures, but who are actually not understanding the conclusions of the Vedic scriptures, they are, of course, so proud of their knowledge, it's very, very difficult
to ever give them the mercy. So, if I do not induce them to take devotional service because of committing the offense of blasphemy, none of these people will be able to take to it. I have come to deliver all the fallen souls, but now just the opposite has happened. How can these rogues be delivered? How may they be benefited? If these rogues offer me obeisances, the reactions of their sinful activities will be nullified. Then if I induce them, they will take to devotional service. I must certainly deliver all these fallen souls who blaspheme me and do not offer me obeisances. I should accept the sannyas order of life, for thus people will offer me their obeisances, thinking of me as a member of the renounced order. Offering obeisances will relieve them of all the reactions to their offenses. Thus, by my grace, devotional service, bhakti, will awaken in their pure hearts. So we see Lord Chaitanya wasn't even interested in sannyas in itself, but he was just thinking sannyas is the reason why people offer obeisances, and this would be the only way for them to become purified from making offenses against me. So let me therefore take sannyas. It's an external thing. And therefore, we can understand that Lord Chaitanya took sannyas in that mood, that it didn't matter so much about the nature of the sannyas. Right? Therefore, Lord Chaitanya took Ekadanda sannyas. Right? It didn't matter so much the form of the sannyas, because that was only anyway to make people pay obeisances so that their offenses would be forgiven, so that he could give them devotional service. Right? And then, yes, in fact, Ekadanda sannyas was better because it was at that time more widely distributed. Right? It was more widely known and more widely accepted. So it had more social prestige, and therefore even more people would bow down. Therefore, I think, go for that one. Right? So we see how Lord Chaitanya actually took sannyas in a spirit of a preacher, and simply to deliver people from their offensive mentality. In other words, in a spirit of giving pure devotional service, and from a very transcendental perspective, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was approaching this sannyas simply for the purpose of distributing bhakti to fulfill his mission as a preacher, for no other reason. So tomorrow I like to continue with the pastime of the Lord, what happened after he took sannyas. And I just won't say anything about it today, because I want to keep the juice for tomorrow. But basically, we are entering now into what is called the Acharya Lila of the Lord. The Acharya Lila of the Lord, where Lord Chaitanya is acting as a preacher and is about to take sannyas and will travel, will preach, and it is the external purpose for the appearance of the Lord. At a later stage, we'll go deeper into that point. But basically, Lord Chaitanya will reveal his wonderful pastimes as a preacher. Okay, so maybe I'll stop and see if there are some comments or questions. I've never seen it stated as such. The connection there, though, is we see that there is a worship of the Lord going on, and all the great principal demigods are worshiping the Supreme Lord. It appears to me that the demigods were not in the same position as the as those who were bewildered. In the childhood pastimes of the Lord, the demigods were all along aware of the Lord's appearance. It is said that when Sachi, when Mother Sachi was pregnant, right? That all these strangers would come into the house. Many people would visit the house, and they were all different demigods who were hiding and disguising themselves as ordinary people. So the demigods were certainly aware of the Lord appearing in his transcendental nature. So it's not the same. It's like, although there are obviously, it reminds us, one pastime reminds us of the other. The Gaura Arti also describes a pastime which is happening on the bank of the Janavi where Lord Chaitanya is seated on a golden throne. We should take that more into the same mood as the arti that is going on where Radha Govinda are sitting in Vrindavan under a desire tree. We could just jump to the Madhya Lila and to the invocation where these famous verses are given. Let me just. In a temple of jewels in Vrindavan, underneath a desire tree, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, served by their most confidential associates, sit upon an effulgent throne. I offer my humble obeisances to them. Divyat Vrindaranya Kalpadrumada, Srimad Ratnagara Simasanasto, Srimad Radha Shila Govinda Devo, Pestali Bi Sevyamanu Smarami. It's a very famous verse. But that's, I think that it's comparable to that verse. I think that the equivalent of what in the pastimes of Lord Krishna is described in this particular verse, right, is manifesting itself in the Chaitanya Lila in what is described in the Bhajan of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And there is the parallel. So Mahaprakash Lila, although it resembles that, is a different activity. Yeah, there are no hard and fast rules, and it's very personal. I mean, he may deal with one person in one way, and I mean, we cannot imitate. We cannot think, okay, now I'm also going to calculate, you know, astrologically. No, somehow or other, that Brahmana must have already pleased the Lord before that he was given that mercy. He must have already, Lord Chaitanya must have already recognized him as being a great pure devotee. So when he came as a very pure and exalted Brahmana, then the Lord felt moved. Because the whole principle of devotional service is that devotional service is never a mechanical process. It's never a process where one chants so many rounds or performs an X number of Govardhan Parikramas and so many plates of prasadam taken. And that at the end of life, we have a little notebook, and at the gates of the spiritual world, we pull it out, you know, our passports. It's like, well, you know, 27 full Govardhan Parikramas, right? 3 Vraja Mandals, a couple of Navadvip Mandals, and, you know, and like so many Sunday feasts, right? And like, and everything is recorded there, and like it's like our passport, kind of. Well, I don't know, it might help, a little book like that, but still, the Lord doesn't count like that. The Lord really looks at the heart, right? And if he sees that that a devotee is making sacrifice, yes, is really going out of his way for the pleasure of the Lord, like we can read in the Adi Lila chapter 4, about the internal mood of the Lord, and there it is described, the mood of the gopis is described. And it's very nice because it is said that pure love is that that even while there are so many good reasons to give it up, one still doesn't give it up. That's pure love. Right? So that was very nice. I like that. So the gopis, they had that mood, and obviously that's a devotee's mood, you know, like in spite of struggle, in spite of everything, I'm just going to continue this service to Krishna. Right? So the Brahmana must have displayed this mood of like, I'm in spite of whatever, I'm going to please Krishna. Therefore, the Lord gave him the mercy. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya may have given causeless mercy too. Like somewhere in this chapter, it's described that there was a beggar who came to Lord Chaitanya's door and the Lord was just dancing at the time. The door was open and Lord Chaitanya was dancing. And when the beggar just came to beg, you know, give me one five, 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 garib, garib, five, five. Just remember a beggar, you know. Five, five. He just came in that beggar mood. And as he came, five, he was begging. So Lord Chaitanya, if you beg from Lord Chaitanya, right, well, you know. So he begged from Lord Chaitanya. So suddenly he was also dancing. Next moment he was dancing. He didn't know how it happened. But he saw Lord Chaitanya dancing and then he was dancing. And suddenly love of God was there. So sometimes Lord Chaitanya just is also very generous. Like that. So it's very personal. Yes, very nice. Need more response. Now, we have to build up this response thing, you know, like... You just have to think of things and write them down. Yeah. No, I don't think that we have to try and see that everything Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing is a covert form of Ras Lila. I don't think so. I think that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is building up, right, his entire activities on this planet, and that the intimate dealings of Vrindavan are certainly most dear to him. Yet they're not presented cheaply. It's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to the marketplace and just goes and just pours it out, you know, like and Radhe and Krishna and, you know, throws it all in front of the masses, right? Not at all. The Lord is rather in various ways preparing the ground, right, and uplifting the consciousness and so forth. So I think that we see that purpose is there. Now, you can never see that purpose loose from his inner purpose. His purpose to not only give Vrajalila in the sense to reveal Vrajalila, but rather to absorb every living being in his eternal activity, right, of the activities of Golok. Right? So it's not just telling, no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants that every living being becomes part of the eternal pastimes. But it's not that he's always in a covered way talking about the eternal pastimes, but he is preparing the ground. So sometimes he's teaching regulative principles. And really for the purpose of establishing regulative principles. But the purpose of regulative principles is ultimately Krishna Prem. So in that way, everything is connected. And in that way, we understand that it is pointed out that Harinam Sankirtan is also non-different from the meditation on Vrindavan, because it is always bringing people to the pastimes of Vrindavan. And being in separation from Vrindavan and bringing those who are far now from Vrindavan, covered by Maya, bring them back. So in this way, Sankirtan is really a very high, the highest manifestation of that consciousness. So in one sense, there's no distinction that can be made between the internal and external. It is a technical distinction. Because in one sense, within the external Sankirtan mission, the internal ecstasy is there. Right? And the deepest internal experience is right there. And Prabhupada, of course, also said that, right? And explained that that he mentioned to Rameshwar something to the effect that Sankirtan was actually the activities of the gopis, and if the gopis they would join the Sankirtan devotees, right? That book distribution was actually that activity.
Yeah, and of course the distinction is made between the internal and the external aspects. And in the course of the next 2 weeks, we will go in depth on these matters. And I think, you know, love of God. If there is no yoga maya in Vaikuntha, what kind of love of God is there? Well, there is a very deep, respectful mood. I mean, it should not be taken cheaply. Obviously, it is said that the ladies in Vaikuntha are also every day sweeping the palaces, right? Although there is no dust. Right? There's no dust in those palaces, and still they sweep them every day. Because they don't need dust to sweep. Right? Here we need dust, and even that won't help. Someone has to write in it, "I want to be cleaned," or something like that. But, you know, in the and there, there's no dust, and still they sweep for the pleasure of Krishna. So it may be difficult for us to fully appreciate, because even, I mean, the love of God of the residents of Vaikuntha is greater than anything we experience in our heart at this point. At least I speak for myself, and therefore it's hard to fully fathom the depth of that love. But it is genuine love, because it is just as it's mentioned about the gopis, Admendriya Pritivanche, Tarabolakam Krishnendriya Pritiyiche Dara Premanam, that it's all Krishnendriya. It is all for the pleasure of Krishna. So it's definitely love. But then again, it doesn't have the same element of ras that is there as in Vaikuntha, as in Golok. It is only... it is always respectful, always. So yes, that inhibits certain intimacy. There is a distance. When this respect is there, then there is a distance between the devotee and the Lord. The devotee cannot really, he couldn't really do something totally wild, right? He couldn't just go up to the plate of the Lord and just snatch, you know, a nice gulab jamun off the plate of the Lord, right? I mean, that would be like sacrilege. That would be inconceivable. Would not, you know, in Vaikuntha, that would be the activity of a demon, right? You know, that would like wouldn't fit in Vaikuntha. That would be no such thing. There would be. But in Golok, that could well happen, could very well happen. So, yes, so there's a lot missing in that regards. What is missing is when, that although the devotee in this respectful mood is feeling overwhelmed with love for the Supreme Lord, what is missing is the activity coming from the Lord. The Lord is just sitting there and cannot like reciprocate in the same way as with this devotee who is in an intimate mood like Vrindavan. The Lord cannot snatch his gulab back or something like that, you know. And they can't wrestle, they can't. So many details will not be there. So, in this way, it puts the Lord kind of in a role of a receiver of worship and of one who's giving benedictions,
So it confines the role of the Lord. I think that is the biggest problem. And therefore, the devotees following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they don't want anything to do with that. Right? They want like the Lord in intimacy. And they want to... But that cannot be cheaply taken. Therefore, we have our regulative principles. And if we look at the instructions to Sanatan Goswami, then we find these 64 principles outlined. I've included them in my paper because I find that they're obviously essential. They are what we got, you know. That's what's been given to us, 64 different activities which we can use to develop our taste. And within there are so many details of being respectful. So there's a lot of need to first cultivate the respect. We should not prematurely become intimate, but respect is required. Because although he was, but then he was taken to Vrindavan immediately after his birth, right? Yeah, so therefore, because he was from birth with Nanda Maharaj, and he was always a cowherd boy, he was considering himself a cowherd boy, people considered him a cowherd boy, but later on, you know, they kind of accepted him again as a kshatriya, because he was the son of Vasudev. But Krishna himself, he's thinking, I was a coward boy. I don't know that so much. No, sorry, can't tell you. Maybe somebody else knows these things. That I wouldn't know. Nanda Maharaj was the king of the cowherd men in Vrindavan. He was not at all an ordinary... you know, like man milking cows, etc. He was living, he had a palace, he had many servants, he was truly ruling that village. He was like, but yet he was a Vaishya. Yes. I've used up the time, and I'm 5 minutes over, so I don't know what happens now, but we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much for coming. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.